You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Ewan Murray.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Julian Suri becomes the first player to win on both the Challenge Tour and the European Tour in the same season with victory at the Made in Denmark.
Man, you know, this is the reason why, you know, you practice, you wake up the early mornings, you go to the gym and can be mentally ready and have the physical tools to perform under the gun, and this was awesome.
We'll chat to the American later in the program who carded a flawless 64 to see off the challenge of England's David Horsey.
Just really wasn't quite firing, to be honest, to start with. And then, you know, made a few birdies then, sort of going into the back nine and put a bit of pressure on him, and it was a great battle, to be honest, and he played very well and thoroughly deserved the victory.
We'll look back at the best of the action from Denmark, round up the week's golfing news, and preview the next event on tour, the D+D Real Czech Masters. Hello, I'm Dan Roebuck, and I'm pleased to say that this week I'm joined by Ewan Murray. Ewan, how are you?
I'm in top form. Good to be alongside you.
Fantastic event, the Made in Denmark. The fans really love it. They come in their thousands. It's a great televisual event as well. It's become a cult event on the European Tour in a very short space of time.
It has, and most of that's down to the fans. It's not up there with the Rolex series as far as prize money is concerned yet, but it's made tremendous advances, I think, in the course of the last few years, and that is down to the thousands of fans that come in there and give the event the proper atmosphere that you want to, as a player, get out there and perform.
Now, we're having a number of American players, young American players, who are coming over to the European Tour and really building their trade. They're learning their trade. And Julian Suri is another. He's sort of following in the footsteps of the likes of Brooks Koepka and Peter Uihlein and Paul Peterson. And he's another player that's trajectory is on the rise.
Well, you look at his final round, he played that like a veteran. When you do have an atmosphere with thousands of fans in there and you're looking for your first victory, it's never really an easy stage to perform. But when you think no drop shots in that final round of 64, it was an exceptional performance.
He started the day two behind the overnight leader, David Horsey. Now, when you make a couple of birdies in the first four holes or so, I think three in the first four, you start to hit the front. Does the mindset change? Because obviously you're a chaser at the start of your round, but you've got to the summit and beyond it very quickly. Have you got to change the way your mindset is, your course management is?
I don't think so. I think you just play along and you see what happens. There's a lot of talk about tournaments beginning and the 10th tee on a Sunday afternoon, and as you move along in that final round, yes, you will have to make one or two adjustments, but not at that time. And David, of course, a multi-winner on the European Tour, so Julian would be well aware of that. And the thing that impressed me most about Suri was his patience and the way he believed that his time had come. And of course, it surely did in the end.
Five birdies on the front nine, two on the back nine. We saw David Horsey fight back with birdies at 10 and 11. And from Horsey's point of view, you mentioned a multiple European Tour winner. He would have expected to get the job done. Was there more pressure on his shoulders?
I don't think so. What would annoy David immensely was the way he played the final hole. If he'd managed to knock his tee shot down the fairway alongside Suri's, then it's still very much game on with his second shots. He then tries to force the pace with a birdie and takes it into extra holes. That would really annoy David, but I know him well enough to think that that annoyance won't last very long and he'll be able to focus on the next event. And he was fortunate in the sense that the seven he took at the end didn't cost him anything. He was still in second place, but it really did open the door wide for Suri.
Yeah, a triple bogey on the last for David Horsey. The drive went way left. He was never going to recover from that. But as you say, he had to do something because he was one behind at the time.
Yeah, he'd just be annoyed that he missed the fairway by so much. It's not the easiest drive, I have to say. The trees down the left, the water hazard on the right-hand side. And if there is such a thing as a good seven, he had it, because it could have been an awful lot worse. It reminded me of David Toms over at the Wells Fargo. He won the Wells Fargo at Quail Hollow with an 8 on the 72nd. It doesn't really happen too often in any career, but it certainly happened on Sunday for Horsey.
You mentioned the attitude of Julian Suri. What about his game? What impressed you when you were watching him?
I saw a mature 26-year-old who's much travelled, having been born over in New York. And a player who's come through the ranks, a player who's played college golf, which is very important stateside. Then he comes over to play on the Challenge Tour and makes his way on that, learns how to play four rounds, learns how to win. And I think he was just ready when the time came.
Was it almost a match play situation between the two, do you think, from the turn? Because they were exchanging birdies. We saw Horsey birdie 10 and 11. Then we saw Suri birdie 14 and 15. It was nip and tuck throughout. I guess you've still got to look at leaderboards, but with third and backwards way off the pace, you've just got to concentrate on who you're playing with.
It was between the two players. And what impressed me also about Suri was he said he looked at the leaderboard in the middle of the front nine. He looked at the leaderboard at the turn. He wanted to see a leaderboard at 11 and 12, and there wasn't one there. So he asked an official to find out what was going on. Believe it or not, there's one or two winners on the European Tour in the last four or five
years. This always amazes me.
Who says they don't look at leaderboards.
Why is that? This amazes me every single time I hear it. And as you say, it's not just the odd one. It might be a dozen players that say, oh, well, I don't look at leaderboards. And there are stories throughout golf that have catalogued players who didn't realise they only needed a par for a major or whatever. Why do players not do that?
Well, the leaderboard tells you exactly what you have to do. And I remember Chris Wood winning the PGA, the BMW PGA at Wentworth last year, and he didn't look at leaderboards. Now, had he looked at the leaderboard and saw he was two clear and two to play, he would have played the 17th hole different. Suri was up there saying, I want to know exactly what's going on here so that I can make my plan and then go ahead and execute it. And that's exactly what he did.
Well, I'm delighted to say that we're now joined by the man of the moment, Julian Suri. Julian, you've been playing very well on the Challenge Tour and the European Tour. We get the sense that this win was coming.
Yeah, well, thanks so much, first off. I feel like it has been kind of a steady progression. The first stretch of events, I was over here for 12 weeks. I played 11 events, and I was in contention a lot. Even though I won once on the Challenge Tour, I was in the last couple groups a whole lot, and that was a really good experience. And then playing the Open, and then the very next week, I was in the second to last group on Saturday and Sunday at the Porsche European Open in Hamburg, and I really learned a lot coming from that sort of mentally and how to go into those types of situations, and especially with the crowds. And, you know, it's just a little bit of different atmosphere, which is awesome. And then having a couple weeks at home coming into Denmark was really good for me to work on some technical stuff with my coach. And I felt really good about my game coming into this past week. So I'm pretty pleased with how it turned out.
It was the stuff of dreams, Julian. You're two shots back. You've got 18 holes to go. You're chasing your maiden victory. Seven birdies, no bogeys, 64. Couldn't have been better.
Yeah, no. I mean, honestly, I was looking back at it, and I think Ben Hogan was the one who said, you know, every round, the most you're going to have is one or two perfect golf shots. And that was probably true. But I felt like I can only recall like two or three shots that I was like, those weren't good ones. Like, I really hit a lot of good golf shots. And for me to execute that well in those circumstances on a Sunday in the final group was really, really nice to see, considering the last time I was in that situation, it didn't go so well in Germany. And it was just kind of a testament to the progress I've made, I think. A
couple of early birdies. You managed to catch David Horsey, but it was a good battle between the pair of you for much of the round. What was the key hole, do you think? Because you inched ahead on the 15th with a brilliant birdie putt. Was that the pivotal play, do you think?
I think so, because even though I was, I think, a couple ahead at the turn or through 10 before he made a couple in a row, I knew, you know, the birdies are out there, and you know, you hear the crowds going wild on a couple holes across, and you know the birdies are out there. The greens are soft, and you got to stay aggressive. So I knew, even though I had a 2-stroke lead, that, you know, that doesn't mean anything with 7-8 holes to go. I definitely say the putt on 15 was big, because I had really good looks on 12. I had about 10 footer that I left short, and then 13 I had about a 20 footer that I left short. Both were right in the middle, kind of just a foot short or so. And we both birdied 14, which is, it was a short par four. You know, the wind was helping. It was kind of playing like a long par three. And 15, for me to, I had about a 20 footer up the hill. And for me to make that, not only make it, but make it with authority, it was in the back of the cup. It was a good aggressive stroke. That was really big for me. And I felt like I was in the driver's seat after that.
Julian, born in New York, you've got strong affiliations with St. Augustine, the Carolinas. Now a winner in Europe. What's in the future, the next two or three years for you?
Oh, man, it's hard to say. You know, first of all, I mean, I'm just trying to go through what I'm going to do the next month or two with my schedule. That's totally been flipped upside down in a very good way. But yeah, I've had to kind of rearrange some travel plans, and I'm still in the process of doing that. But you know, obviously, I love the travel, and you know, I want to play all the top events in the world. But as for the immediate future, you know, I'm having a blast doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, we're really enjoying you playing on the European Tour, and of course, we've had some successful Americans come over in the last few years. Brooks Koepka, of course, springs to mind. We've had Peter Uihlein win on the European Tour as well. Do American players see the European Tour a little bit differently now? Is there a way to progress in your career by playing in regular European Tour events, and not just European Tour events, but coming in via the Q School as you did and into the Challenge Tour?
I think so. I think it's getting more and more commonplace. I know a lot of people that I know back in the U.S., they see it as a normal route to go now. Like, I think just as viable as doing the events in the U.S. There's something to be said for coming over and sort of being comfortable, being uncomfortable, if that makes sense. You know, you're in a new place, even though I know a lot of these guys from, you know, a lot of them played college in the U.S. and, you know, friends of friends, and, you know, you meet people pretty quickly. It's still a totally different experience. You know, there's something to be said for that, for experiencing all the different types of conditions week to week, even day to day. And, you know, I mean, dealing with things that, like, for example, I had 4 weeks in a row where I had some baggage issues with my clubs. You know, that stuff, it's tough to negotiate, especially when people maybe don't speak English as their first language. And, you know, you're trying to get through that. You have to stay patient. It's really kind of I think it builds a lot of sort of intangibles.
Dan mentioned Brooks Koepka. You've seen quite a bit of Brooks in your formative years.
Yeah. We grew up playing a lot of golf together in Florida, a lot of junior golf. Florida Junior Tour, which was a state tour, but it was a very strong tournament. It's just high level of competition. And then all through juniors in college, we were in the same conference. He's a year older than me, so we played quite a bit then. And so, yeah, no, it's been cool to see him to win a major this year. It's been, you know, definitely pretty cool, something to aim towards for me in the near future. And I've known, and Chase is over here this whole summer. I played a bunch with him on the Challenge Tour. And again, I've known him since I was playing with Brooks. He was always the kid, you know, I'd have a putting contest with him, the putting green. So, and he was always watching along and very bubbly and everything. So it's nice to see him playing well also, and to have another American doing well is cool to see.
Yeah, there's great camaraderie between Americans. We know that. And I believe you traveled with one this week to the Czech Republic. John Daly is obviously teeing up this week, as he did last week. Are you enjoying his company?
Oh, man, he's the best. You know, I didn't meet him until about 15 minutes before my round on Sunday. It was some last-minute travel changes because I was supposed to take a train from Aalborg to Copenhagen and then spend the night and then take a flight to Prague. But because I was in the last group, you know, that would have been quite a late night. So luckily my management and the promoter were able to pull some strings and talk to John, and he was taking a jet to Prague. And you know, he's such a nice guy. You know, I've grown up watching him play, but more than that, watching him do interviews and how honest and upfront he is with everything going on, not just the golf. And I really respect that. And just to hang out with him for a couple hours last night was really cool. Him and his lovely fiance, Anna, that was very cool. That's for sure.
A lot of positivity around yourself and your game at the moment. You are playing this week. Can you go back to back?
I don't see why not, you know? I mean, like Drake said, I got to go back-to-back. That's Jordan 96-97. Like I said, you know, the physical game is there. I think the bigger part for me is just regrouping mentally and energy-wise. And today I'm taking the day completely off. And tomorrow will be a light day as well, since I'm playing the Pro-Am on Wednesday, which is a new thing now on the main tour, which is a nice perk, I guess. So, yeah, I think a lot of it is just kind of regrouping and starting from scratch on this week.
It's been terrific watching you play. There's been a lot more focus on you, of course, than there will be this week. We wish you well, not just for this week, but for the remainder of the season as well. Many thanks for joining us, Julian, on the Race 2 Dubai show.
Sure thing. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Really interesting to hear from Julian Ewan. Really good talker as well. And you can really see he's got a lot of ambition in the game and level-headed also.
I think also the fact he's come to, which is now fairly late, on in life, 26 years of age. Tiger changed all of that when he turned pro in 19 and started winning majors, masters in 1997, whatever. You look at this fella who's 26 years of age, you think, well, he's come to the winner's circle. He's experienced enough highs and lows in his career, and he's now ready. He's now ready to push on from here, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if he does exactly that.
Well, it was the American's first title in only his seventh European Tour event. He's the first player to win on both the European Tour and the European Challenge Tour in the same year, and he's now 60th on the Race to Dubai rankings and 109th in the official world golf rankings. It just goes to show you, and when you win, you get catapulted up those rankings across the various different events that you've got to try and get into, and he's not too far away now from getting into the majors and so on.
That's right. Top 50 is the aim of every player who's out there now. And if he was to go ahead and win in the Czech Republic, he would certainly push his way into the top 80, top 85. So the next step then is a very short one.
Time to hear from the runner-up, England's David Horsey.
Yeah, a little bit of a clumsy start. Didn't really hit it close enough for the first sort of 7 or 8 holes, and then birdie 7, par 5. But yeah, just really wasn't quite firing, to be honest, to start with. And then, you know, made a few birdies then, sort of going into the back nine and put a bit of pressure on him. And it was a great battle, to be honest. And he played very well and you know, he thoroughly deserved a victory.
I was going to say, it kind of almost turned into a bit of a match play situation after he got off to such a good start. How much did you kind of enjoy the kind of battle with him on the back nine?
Yeah, it's great. When someone's playing well and you don't really expect them to make mistakes, you know you've got to make birdies, and it really helps you focus on what you've got to do. Unfortunately, didn't quite hold as many putts as him today. But yeah, for him to get off to that start, being 500 through 9 or 10, I think it was, and... yeah, and then for me to sort of come back and give him a bit of a battle there towards the end. Just a shame I couldn't quite put enough pressure on him at the last.
Probably not right now, but maybe after a couple of days. Can you take the massive positives out of this week, looking forward to the end of the season?
Yeah, for sure, yeah. My game's coming on. Been doing a lot of work the last sort of 3 or 4 months, and it's really starting to take effect. Still not quite where I want it. Work in progress, and yeah, hopefully finish the year strong.
He's got to take the positives. Second in a European Tour event. He was second in the Linus Open earlier this campaign. A multiple tour winner. A talented performer. And when the dust settles, he will take plenty from his trip to Denmark.
Yes, very annoyed with himself, I'm sure, for an hour or two after the way he played that 18th. But, you know, that happens to every player, and it's happened down the years. It will happen in the future as well. And the quicker you can forget it and press on, the better. And I'm sure David will do exactly that.
Well, there was a 3-way tie for third with Steve Webster, Chris Paisley and Ben Evans, who we can hear from now.
The last couple of weeks I went to see a different person just to get some input in my swing, which has helped in my wedge shots. Not necessarily, my irons haven't been actually that good this week. I've wedged it well, and for some reason I just love these greens. I seem to be able to read them pretty well and yeah, hold a lot of putts. I felt like a lot of like inside 10 feet, which is what you need to do.
Ben Evans in a share for third, along with Steve Webster and Chris Paisley. Pleased for all three, in particular Steve Webster. He's not had the best of time of things off the course with family issues, I know. And you sense that here's a player that we've seen over the years play really well on the European Tour, and it's great to see him on leaderboards.
Yes, and he's had injuries as well, which has resulted in a lack of confidence, which then results in a lack of form. But, you know, it's 22 years ago since Steve Webster won the silver medal in the Open Championship back in 1995. It's been a good career, and maybe this is the start of a second career. No question about the talent of Webster, but he now needs a strong finish to the end of this season.
And just because it's John Daly, let's hear from the former Open champion who finished tied 10th.
Oh, it's been great. The fans in Europe and all over, wherever I go, have just been super. And, you know, I wish I'd have made some putts. You know, I honestly think if the first one on the first hole goes in, I hit a great putt, and the chip goes in on 3 that had a chance, you know, I think some good things might have happened. But it was still a great week for me. I mean, you know, I was there, I had a chance, just couldn't get a putt to go in today.
Not that the tournament needs more fans, because they go there in their thousands, but there are always big galleries following John Daly.
There is. It's been that way since he burst on the scene in 1991 over at Crooked Stick in Indiana when he took the place of Nick Price. And, of course, the rest was fairy tale stuff, winning his first major, following that with the Open Championship. I think an underachiever, John. 2 majors, maybe not the right thing to say, but the talent he had and the game he had, Augusta was made for Daly, and he never really performed there.
He enjoyed playing at the Maiden Denmark. Many players do. Do some not enjoy the razzmatazz that go with holes like the 16th at Himmelen?
I guess that's like asking a striker, does he like the noise when the ball hits the back of the net? If you're a player, and I used to love playing in the Open Championship, the Open had its own noise. And next to that was the Irish Open back in the 70s and 80s when we played at Port Marnock and Royal Dublin. To play in front of really good fans is very special. it's something money can't buy. You need to be there to experience it. So I think every player would have enjoyed last week.
A terrific event. Let's get the top 10 from the Made in Denmark.
There was a four-way tie in 10th place. Marcel Siem, who's found some form recently. Robert Rock, Aaron Rye and John Daly. There was also a four-way tie in 6th place there. Matt Wallace, who won in Portugal. Hayden Porteous, a young South African. Wade Ormsby and Benjamin Hébert from France. England had a good time. There were 7 English players in the top 13 and 3 of them were tied third. Ben Evans, Chris Paisley and Steve Webster. Horsey takes 2nd place and €200,000, but a huge day, a huge week in the life of Julian Surrey. He's a European Tour winner.
Big week as well for Thomas Bjorn. Just a quick word on the Ryder Cup captain. His 500th European Tour event, and they love him there, don't they?
They do. I first met Thomas when he played the Challenge Tour. He won the Challenge Tour in 1995 with £52,000, 4 victories, and then came on and won pretty quickly on the European Tour. A great career. I enjoyed the masks. I enjoyed the Thomas Bjorn masks.
That was on the Thursday, on the 16th, wasn't it? About 3,000 all wearing Thomas Bjorn masks, and they sang You'll Never Walk Alone. A massive Liverpool fan, so it was a good weekend for him, even though he slipped down the leaderboards on the last day.
Well, he was OK. He was inside the top 50. But Denmark has a European Ryder Cup captain, and they have a player in Thomas Bjorn I think they should be very proud of.
Well, Thomas has had a really enjoyable week in Denmark, but it starts to get a little more serious for the day now, doesn't it, Ewan?
It certainly does. His eyes will be in the newspapers, it will be out there on the golf course, it will be on the television screens to see who the 12 are that's going to go to Le Golf National next year and try and wrestle the Ryder Cup back. The points starting in the Czech Republic for the first time. Normally start over in Switzerland. So, yes, it's a long process. But, of course, if you're trying to get up any list, you want to get off to the best possible start. So an added incentive for the players in the Czech Republic this week.
Fantasy Race to Dubai tips. John Hawksworth was sat in your chair last week and went for Torbjørn Olesen, who finished 14th. I went for Bradley Dredge, who finished 4th. So I didn't do... 134th.
Actually, that's a big improvement than the last time I was here with you. I must say, you and I are the worst tipsters on radio, television, sport.
We've got to do better this week. We really have. I think that's my worst performance of all time. And Bradley's got a great record in the Made in Denmark, so it was just an off few days, unfortunately.
Do you know, I'm very tempted to go for him next week.
It would not surprise me. These things happen, certainly in golf. In the Fantasy Race to Dubai game, Emilio Garcia Ibanez now leads the overall standings with Damian McCloskey doing the best from the tournament in Denmark. Meanwhile, in our Race to Dubai Show mini league, Neil Morrison still leads, but Danny Cole got the most points last week. Remember to head to europeantour.com for their fantasy 3 to watch at this week's D+D Real Czech Masters. And remember to go to the European Tour Twitter and Facebook pages to see the best shots of the week from the Made in Denmark tournament. In other news, former Ryder Cup player Barry Lane secured his 6th European Senior Tour title as he carded a final round 5-under-par 67 to win the Willow Senior Golf Classic by 5 strokes. The Englishman, who represented Europe at the 1993 Ryder Cup, fired the lowest round in Senior Tour history on Saturday, a 12-under-par 60. He was always very capable of going low, Barry, and he still is, Ewan.
That's an amazing score. When you're over the age of 50 and courses the way they're set up today and you manage to get yourself round there in 12 under par. I wonder what happened to the other 6 holes. They obviously fell away there. Tremendous performance.
Elsewhere, Pedro Oriol claimed a maiden European Challenge Tour victory at the Rolex Trophy, overcoming Adrien Sadier in a playoff in Switzerland. The Spaniard moves up to 3rd in the Road to Amman rankings. And on the PGA Tour, 2 of the game's biggest names, Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson, went head-to-head in a playoff at the Northern Trust, with Johnson prevailing to win at the first extra hole. It was an extraordinary extra hole as well, because Dustin Johnson's tee shot, I don't know what the carry was, 340 yards or something?
Well, at Firestone in the Bridgestone Invitational, the longest drive of the week came from Dustin Johnson, and it was 1 yard short of 1/4 of a mile.
That's just unbelievable. It really is. Jordan Spieth suggested that he should have really attempted to play the final hole, the 18th, again, as Dustin Johnson did. I'm not quite sure he's capable, but it's just incredible what Dustin Johnson can do.
Yeah, when he's on form, he's playing a different golf course and playing a different game. And I guess you can add Justin Thomas to that as well. There's one or two that really send it out there. And I admire Spieth because he's an average hitter. He's not short, he's not long, and yet he's able to compete with them and will continue to compete with them, I'm sure, in the years ahead.
He was five clear in the last round at the Northern Trust, but didn't get the job done. We've seen Jordan throw leads away previously. Occasionally he comes back, sometimes he doesn't.
Well, these questions will be asked, but of course if you're in contention as often as Jordan Spieth is, you're going to lose as many as you're going to win, maybe lose more. Yes, a lot of the chat will go back to Augusta. He also had an event last year. He was nicely clear and didn't manage to close that one out. But when you have as many chances as Spieth, you're not going to be successful all of the time.
Quick word on Paul Casey. Fifth, he's knocking on the door in some big events, isn't he?
I honestly think a frustrating year for Casey. His best year financially, no doubt about that, because of his consistency. One win on the PGA Tour, and you have to go back to 2009, the Shell Houston Open there for Casey. He's a better player than that, and Casey will be bubbling underneath. He's been up there in contention on many occasions, and he's still looking for his first victory in the space of the last 8 years stateside. He's honestly a better player than that.
Well, he's certainly a quality performer. He's not quite in the top 10 of the world, though, Ewan.
No, Casey's 14th, and his highest position was a few years back when he managed to get to third. Top 10 this week, and there's been quite a few changes. Ricky Fowler occupies 10, former world number one Jason Day down at 9, Henrik Stenson at 8, Garcia, the Masters champion, at 7. Justin Thomas at 6, then we move into the top 5, and a big move from John Rahm over the course of the last 4 days, up from 8th last week to 5th. McIlroy occupies 4th. There's been a change at 2 and 3. Matsuyama drops to 3. Spieth advances to 2. And Dustin Johnson, with that fine victory, has increased his lead at the top of these world rankings.
Let's look ahead to this week's event next, the D plus D Real Czech Masters. On the outskirts of Prague, the American Paul Peterson won here last year with a birdie at the last for his maiden European Tour victory. The Albatross Golf Resort. It's been used for this event, Ewan, over the last few years. It's fairly new and it stretches out to almost 7,500 yards. They don't make them short anymore, do they?
No, sadly not. They don't. It seems to be the modern way. But it hasn't been open long, as you say. It opened in 2009. It's quite a big estate, 200-acre estate there, so they had plenty of room to add that yardage. It's not flat like many of the normal courses. It's a beautiful part of the Czech Republic. 18th hole, really difficult hole to finish. Strangely enough, hasn't got that much yardage in it. Not an awful lot longer than 400, but there's water on both sides there. And as you find in modern courses, the greens are fairly generous, they're fairly big, and I suspect there'll be some low scoring there.
In 2014, Jamie Donaldson won. In 2015, Thomas Peters. As we mentioned last year, Paul Peterson was the winner. As soon as I see Peters' names on roll calls of winners, I think, well, is this a driver's course? Because he can hit it out there.
I know exactly what you're saying here, and he can hit it straight for the distance he hits it, which is a rare commodity in the game, but I think nowadays, you know, there are so many good players. I remember when I was playing with some of the guests that you have in here, there was maybe 12, 15 players could win. Now you're looking at 60 to 80 players could go ahead and win this. So I don't think there's one outstanding favourite.
It's a decent field as well. We've got one or two star performers rocking up, including Martin Kaymer, Ewan, who's had a little bit of injury issue over the course of this campaign.
He has. He's had a shoulder injury that's niggling. It's taking a long time to heal 100%. And he's getting there and hasn't won, obviously, since that brilliant victory in the US Open at Pinehurst in 2014. I find that strange. I think Kaymer's time must come soon.
Going to be good to watch Kaymer play. Who else will you be watching this week in Czech Masters with interest?
Julian Suri is someone I will watch with a lot of interest. I think speaking to him earlier, you sensed a wonderful sense of achievement, of course, in winning your first tournament, but I also sensed a calmness in there and looking forward to the next event. He's a player I will be looking at. Another one is Jordan Smith, who I think, is one of the brightest young prospects in the game of golf today.
Every single time I speak about Jordan Smith with ex-players, they always say what a good player he is. And this was before he won earlier on this campaign. He won the European Open, of course, in Germany. What makes his game stand out for you?
Everything. He has a wonderful attitude. He has a calm temperament, which nowadays you must have. I mean, I think in years gone by, you needed that as well. But more important now, simply because there's so many challenges. If you have a weakness, you're going to fall back down the pack. He doesn't have a weakness.
Thomas Peters, we talked briefly about, a winner, of course, in 2015. He was second last year to Paul Peterson. How do you assess his 2017? Because his 2016 was something special. What do you think the mindset is with Thomas at the moment?
I think he has to look at his temperament a little. I think he does get a touch too hot now and again. I think you've got to watch what you do with that, because if you take too much away, you take too much of the player away. I think that's something maybe at the end of the year he'll look back on and think, now, I just need to calm down a little here. I need to sort myself out at certain times, get rid of that fiery stuff quickly so it doesn't affect the next shot. Again, a player I don't think technically has any weaknesses at all, and there's an awful lot more to come from him.
Yeah, missed the cut last week, so he'll be desperate to do well this time around. Another winner on tour this year, another player that I think that we've been hoping he would win over the course of the last couple of campaigns. That's Renato Paratore, who scored at the Nordea Masters. And again, when you look at his record previously when he was an amateur, a name that I'm sure that ex-golfers have looked at to do well.
Yeah, very natural player. Plays the game the way he plays it. Not really interested, I don't think, in the technical side of the game. He also plays very quickly, which a lot of people like. There's a minimum of fuss the way he goes about his job. And having tucked away that first victory on a very difficult course, Bassapack course just outside of Malmo's, not easy. He also had the BMW PGA champion of last year, Chris Wood, breathing down his neck. So, yes, I would expect a strong performance from him, but as I say, I expect a strong performance from so many now. There is that much talent out there.
Yeah, just a reminder, other names that will be teeing it up: Robert Carlson, Darren Clark, Matteo Manassero, Matthew Fitzpatrick as well is a player that we all love watching. He's a very, very talented performer, but again, his 2017 maybe not exactly what he wanted.
Time for him to win again. 3 wins in 13 months, which all began at Woburn, back at the British Masters there, winning Nordea as well, and then winning the DP World Championship. So he certainly has the resume to go ahead and challenge for any title that he tees up for. And again, I expect a strong finish to the season for him.
Yeah, plenty of winners from 2017 as well. Matt Wallace is teeing up in the Czech Republic. Dean Burmester as well. Brett Rumford, we saw play so well in Australia earlier on in the year. A lot of good players, some star names mixed in as well. It's sure to be a terrific event. We just need the winner, Mr. Murray.
Well, I'm thinking Bradley Dredge might do very well next week. And Bradley will be like...
Can I just point out that Bradley Dredge was second to Jamie Donaldson in 2014 here. So he's got the course form, but that's exactly what I said last week.
Well, there you are. And Bradley will be having a chuckle at this because he enjoys a bit of fun as well. I'm going to... Can you give me two? Can you give me...
I don't know if you're allowed to.
You're not allowed to, okay.
You can. You can have two.
Right, I'll go for Bradley Dredge. And I'm also going to go, funny enough, for Matt Fitzpatrick.
That's your two to follow. You're two off the tee. Well, if I'm allowed two as well, I'm going to pick out Renato Paratore, who was fifth in the 2015 edition of this tournament, and of course won in Scandinavia, as we discussed just a few moments ago. And I'm also going to pick out Wade Ormsby, who led in the final round in Fiji before throwing in a last day 75 to slip to fifth. He played well in the maiden Denmark last week. He's had injury issues. He had a neck problem that kept him out for 6 months, but he seems to be reinvigorated this year. He's playing on a medical exemption. And I'm hopeful, as an outsider, that he'll play well. Your thoughts on Wade?
Well, I think you go with your feeling. And
you can't just go for the favourites every single time.
No, that's why I'm going for Bradley and Matt.
Well, that is your lot. for this week. Next week, we will review events in the Czech Republic and also look ahead to one of the most popular events on tour. That's the Omega European Masters in the Swiss Alps. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram. And do leave us a review if you're downloading the podcast from iTunes. But for now, from Ewan Murray...
Thoroughly enjoyed your company, Dan.
And myself, Dan Roebuck. It is goodbye. We'll see you next time.